Mr. Winter. You don't have to save any time for rebuttal, isn't that interesting?
No, I don't, Your Honor, but it would be a remarkable circumstance if I can't obtain a reversal with no opposing brief or no opposing counsel, but this might be such a case. This is the circumstance in which my client brought an action against a defendant, alleging that the defendant had defrauded my client when it licensed to my client, or purported to license to my client, the right to distribute certain David Bowie recordings when the defendant, in fact, did not have the right to distribute the right to license those recordings. The case was dismissed by the trial court for want of prosecution, and the circumstances under which that arose were that the attorney who was handling the matter in the district court failed to respond for a period of about 7 months to a motion to dismiss a amended complaint, and he failed apparently to respond to telephone calls that had been made to the attorney by the judge's clerk. We contend that based under the circumstances in this case, it is either excusable neglect or an extraordinary circumstance under Rule 60, and that the district court abused its discretion in dismissing the case or want of prosecution. And what makes this case unique, and one I've not seen before, is that the attorney said in a certificate affidavit filed with the court that he was suffering from depression, that he was under medical care for this symptom of for depression, that he was on various medications, and that as a consequence of this depression, he was unable to organize his existence, his professional life, in order to respond either to the matters that the orders of the court.
Was he the only lawyer that his firm assigned to the case?
No, he was the lead attorney. Apparently, an associate in the same office had filed an appearance in the case. I do not have any evidence in the record as to what his involvement was, Your Honor.
Well, shouldn't you have gotten that evidence?
I have to deal with the record as it existed before this court, and
you weren't in this case at the district court level.
No, I only entered the case after the court had denied the Rule 60 motion. And granted, I'm a member.
Who filed the Rule 60 motion?
A Rule 60 motion was filed by the district court attorney
the depressed person.
Yes, after he had learned of the dismissal for want of prosecution. Yes, Your Honor.
Why did he label it a Rule 60 motion? It seems to me, at this point, you're arguing only Rule 60 grounds, but the way one counts these things, it might have been within 10 days. Judgment was September 30th?
Yes, I believe so, Your Honor.
And but the motion was filed October 15th?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to the question. My personal practice is I'm not really.
It might make it's not going to make a difference now because you're arguing Rule 60. But
I'm really sure there's anything called a motion to reconsider that exists under the federal rules. So I was again not specifically involved in the process, but it doesn't seem to me to be inappropriate.
If it's filed within 10 days, whether it's called a motion to reconsider or virtually anything else, we treat it as Rule 59E motion, and that brings up the judgment for review. Rule 60B doesn't. That's a very profound difference.
Okay, I'm not sure. I'm aware of
that. With that?
No, I'm not really. I can't say I'm aware of any distinction between the Rule 59
really?
And motion
sure.
60. Under these circumstances, no.
There's a huge difference, just for your information, since it does, as Judge Posner says, bring up the underlying judgment, as opposed to this very deferential abuse of discretion kind of review we give to Rule 60 rulings.
Well, but in this circumstance, I'm not really sure that distinction is of much value because, it was dismissed for want of prosecution for failure to respond to the motion to dismiss. There is no underlying, he's not asking him to reconsider some substantive ruling.
It doesn't matter if it's substantive or procedural.
It doesn't matter whether
it's substantive or procedural. There's a different scope of review.
Anyway,
I don't understand. I suppose your client may have a malpractice cause of action against the previous law firm, but why should the defendant be dragged through year after year because the plaintiff's lawyer has some mental problem?
He because they're culpable in this circumstance, and the length that
the defendant is not culpable for the plaintiff being plaintiff's lawyer having a mental illness.
No.
You're not arguing that. I suppose you could drive a lawyer crazy, but
I'm not arguing that. I'm arguing they're culpable.
Legal gaslight.
I'm sorry.
You have to look at it from the defendant's standpoint also. The fact is that the case is now 4 years old, and were they supposed to go back and start over again because the plaintiff had a lawyer with a mental ailment? And what was that associate doing? Didn't he notice?
I don't know the answer. I do not know the answer to that question. But let me say this. The trial court did find specifically, at least, that there was no substantial, no prejudice to the defendant.
Well, I don't understand that. I would think having a case against you kicking around for 4 years is prejudice.
I would contend, Your Honor.
The sword hanging over your... How much are you seeking against the defendant?
A minimum of about $380,000.
A minimum? What's the maximum?
Those are damages. Those are the out-of-pocket costs that my client incurred in attempting to license
the
firm. Well, the lost profits associated with what I don't know off the top of my head.
Well, and is this a large company? Dead Quick Music?
The principals are very wealthy.
Down of the name.
The principals of Dead Quick are very wealthy.
What about the company itself? Is it a big company?
I don't believe it. It itself is that large a company, but it's affiliated with...
Okay, so this is a not very large company, which for 4 years or indefinitely has hanging over it a threat of some substantial lawsuit. And why should they have to put up with that?
Because, as I attempted to say earlier, they are culpable. Not culpable for the plaintiff having hired another...
Right. They're not culpable for the fact that this suit is sitting around forever because the plaintiff has an incompetent lawyer.
I agree with that completely. They are culpable because they defrauded my client.
Well, you see.
Well, I know that, but that's at least that I'm entitled to rely upon, I think, at this point, that I have a complaint on file which states a reasonable a good cause of action, at least in my view. But here's the crux of the legal argument. That the standard that you apply, as you point out, is abuse of discretion. The trial court said that even assuming the affidavit setting forth this condition of depression were true, that's not a sufficient excuse for having not called the court back, and I would beg to differ. I mean,
abuse of discretion squared, because you're arguing that the judge abused his discretion in turning down the Rule 60B request to re-examine his discretionary judgment to dismiss the suit for want of prosecution.
Even squared, I think he abused it. Because you can't think, in one sentence, you can't say, even if this affidavit where someone is saying, and it's a remarkable admission, the first time I've seen it in my years of practice.
I don't see what case could be dismissed for want of prosecution if your argument is right.
You don't see what case could be?
Yeah.
Well, a case where an attorney
would make
call.
Any difference to you.
Well, in the Seventh Circuit, you've been on panels that held that the fact that there's a family member who is sick is not excusable neglect, particularly where there's no evidence in the record that the family illness affected the attorney's ability to prosecute the case. This is different. Here we have the attorney saying, in my view, a remarkable admission that he's suffering from depression. He's no longer with that firm. I don't know if I've ever seen it before. And so under these circumstances, I think it's an abuse of discretion for the trial court to simply say, hey, even if it's true, that's not a sufficient excuse. There is no better excuse, in my view, than an attorney who is incapable of practicing law.
So the worse the attorney, the better the excuse.
Well, it's not a bad attorney. What difference would it make to you
whether he had depression or was just dumb?
It makes a substantial difference.
Why?
Well, because
it equally deserves the client.
Well, I think there's a lot of law, Your Honor, which stands for the proposition that distinguishes between someone who's just slovenly in their behavior and someone who is sick. I mean, and that, you know...
But why? It makes no difference. It's the client that's complaining, not the lawyer. It's not as if he were defending against a disciplinary proceeding and said he was mentally ill.
It's your
client who's complaining. It doesn't matter why the lawyer falls down on the job, does it?
Well, yeah, I disagree, because I mean the whole idea of excusable neglect measures, in most of the cases, if not all, the attorney's neglect and whether
you've got
it's
the
feasible.
Wrong. No, it's the plaintiff who is asking to be excused. And if he hired a lawyer who, unbeknownst to him, what if the lawyer were a criminal?
Well, if I'm wrong, Your Honor, then...
It would be not an excuse. Plaintiff hires a lawyer, and it turns out that this lawyer is a criminal, or he's not a lawyer, he's an imposter. Would that mean that the plaintiff did not have a good excuse if the lawyer screwed up the case?
No, I think he would have a good excuse.
Right. So it's not the character of the lawyer. It's not whether he's mentally ill, a criminal, or an idiot. That's completely irrelevant to your argument.
Well, that's not what the Supreme Court held in Pioneer or the Supreme Court held either.
No, no. Well, look what you just said. You said if the lawyer were a criminal, and that's why he wasn't able to represent the client adequately, the client would have a good excuse.
Right. But that doesn't say that...
Being a criminal or being depressed is just moronic.
No.
Does that make a difference?
The question you asked, though, measured whether, you know, the difference between whether the client is the one with excusable neglect or the attorney who is being measured for whether their neglect was excusable. In all the cases, including all the Seventh Circuit cases that you sat on the panel for, evaluate the conduct of the attorney and whether it is excusable neglect.
But look what you just said, right? If the lawyer is a criminal... Then you evaluate his character, and your conclusion is negative, right?
Well, no. If he turns out to be a criminal, and you could measure the excusable neglect of a client in that circumstance, and say that it was excusable for the client to have hired somebody who was actually not an attorney or was a criminal under certain circumstances. But that doesn't exclude you from looking at whether the conduct of the attorney, whether he's a criminal or not, is
okay.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. All right, move on to our next case.